just them being themselves. I mean, I think they're having really good at bats. You know, Vlad today with the double. Bo hit the shit out of that ball to right center. They're having good at bats. They're really good hitters. You know, it's just a matter of time before they probably really get on a roll. But seeing really kind of what they normally do. Some of their takes were really good, you know, especially Bo in New York and today. So their takes are really good. So they look like themselves, really.
That was John Schneider, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, last night after a 5-2 win over the Seattle Mariners. And Kevin, five doubles for the Blue Jays yesterday. Justin Turner just missed a home run. Bo lined a double off the outfield wall and right. And we talked a little bit on Blue Jays talk after the game about how one of the things Cito Gaston always used to preach was, as a hitting coach, he loved doubles. Everybody loves home runs.
Yeah.
Obviously, home
kills
runs are
rally
great.
Sometimes, though.
Pardon me?
Hitting the homer kills the rally sometimes.
I don't know about killing the rally, but the point is, generally, if you've got a game where a bunch of dudes have hit doubles, your approach has pretty much been spot on.
Yeah.
It looked better last night, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think they knew coming in facing Luis Castillo, they had to get a good pitch to hit. You chase him around the strike zone, it's not going to be a good night for you. And, you know, he's coming off a couple stinkers. You know, you sort of know that he's going to attack the zone. And if you zone him up and think right down the middle, that's what you have to do against good pitchers. You know, they're good pitchers because they can locate and, you know, they can do it with power and they can sort of sometimes pitch to your weakness. You know, most of the really good ones are going to pitch to their strength more than they're going to pitch to your weakness. But you got to force them in the middle of the zone, and when you get it, you can't miss it. And that's, you know, in some big spots, it's exactly what happened. Kirk, he got one early in the game. Vladdy had that one to right field. IKF got one late in the game. Like, those two out RBIs is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing a little bit better at zoning in with two strikes. You're shortening up. You're, you know, sort of in your base a little bit more. The wild swings were not there the way they have been, you know, the first week and a half of the season. So, absolutely. Hopefully. Like, yeah, again, nobody, I think, is asking for the lineup to match what the pitching's going to do. Just get it close. Like, you know, somewhat be competitive on an everyday basis. And if you do that, I think that's what John's trying to say there is, if you do that as a whole, we're going to win most of the games that we're supposed to win. And you know, I think that's sort of a step in the right direction. Everybody you talk to says Miliora is going to carry that, but you need some of the other guys to get the big hit in the big moment. And David Schneider got one of those, right, with the single up the middle, which will help.
Alejandro Kirk got it.
There you go. So,
we'll talk about that later.
Doing some things that will help your team win a baseball game and add to what the starting pitcher's doing on the mound.
We've heard this a lot, and I know you've talked about it, but, you know, for listeners who may not, and viewers who may not have, may not have been around baseball that much, when John Schneider talks about good takes,
yeah,
in particular when he's talking about Bo and Vladdy, what does that mean?
That's a timing thing. Hitting is all timing. The pitcher's job is to disrupt the timing of the hitter, throw you off a little bit with that. And now it's with, you know, all the breaking balls that are being thrown and fastball counts, it's the hitter trying to guess along somewhat with the hitter, right? All the game planning that you do off the field, you're trying to translate to on the field, and that just, you know, you're going to have a better chance of doing that if you're on time at the plate. And I think that's what John's trying to say is, early in the season, these guys trying to get their feet wet, you know, cold weather, you're going from some warm places to some cold places. It's hard a lot of the times to be centered, be on time, be in an athletic position. And my takes look like, if I want to swing at that pitch, I can hit it hard because I'm on time to do it. It's real simple, right? And it's when you start, when the pitcher starts, right? You got to sort of time that up. You got to consistently be, you know, if his foot hits the ground, are you starting your swing? Or is it out front, ball release, then you start your swing? Like, there's a process of when you're trying to be on time to be able to hit velocity. That's what it's all about. It's like Ernie Clement, right? Whenever he speaks, he's talking about, I'm hunting a heater. I'm on time to hit velocity. I can adjust to everything else. It ain't backwards. That's why a lot of the guessing that takes place with the Blue Jays sometimes, they look like they're in between and having just trouble, you know, hitting balls that they're supposed to be hitting really, really hard. And it's a lot of reasons. But to see them like they look last night on time against a good pitcher, like if they consistently do that because they have talent, they're going to score more runs, and that's going to help the guys down on the mound for them, which is the ultimate goal here. I would say mentally the pitching staff for the Blue Jays is going insane. I mean, let's not lie about it. Like, it's like the seventh game of the World Series. Every time you give up a run in the first inning or second inning or the third inning, you thinking you're losing that game because of what the offense is not doing. And now if they can carry what they did over last night because of who they did it against, then maybe they can go on a little winning streak here. And winning streak, that will help with confidence, and that's what they need, I think, is a lot of confidence when it comes to the guy standing at the plate.
You mentioned Ernie Clement. He will join us this afternoon at 3:05 from the Rogers Center. That was very good. Thank you very much. Normally, it's me who tees you up.
Every once in a while.
Dan Schulman will join us in a few minutes. He is, of course, a Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He will have the call of the game tonight, 7:07, first pitch. From the Rogers Center, George Kirby against Chris Bassitt. And at 3:35, Manny Acta, the Seattle Mariners third base coach, will join us. And wanted to get Manny on. He's been a longtime third base coach. Gosh, I mean, back when I covered the Montreal Expos, he's been a manager. And I wanted to talk to Manny about the Rogers Center, because one of the things he does as a third base coach, Kevin, you know this, one of the things third base coaches will do before the first game of a series is they will go out and they will try to
walk the outfield.
To get a read on what the angles are going to be like. In Manny's case, I believe he's also responsible for defensive positioning as well, outfield positioning. And of course, with the Rogers Center, with the new configurations now, you know, we talked yesterday about what impact it might have on the, you know, on the game itself. I don't think that it will necessarily be as dramatic as the impact we saw in stage one of the renovations last year. But I thought it'd be interesting to get Manny's take on how the ballpark plays and
no question
and what's involved in that. And of course, we'll also get a bit of a preview of tonight's starter, George Kirby, from Manny Acton. And also, we'll talk about Julio Rodriguez as well. Jose Berríos last night, 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 6 strikeouts, 101 pitches, 18 called strikes and whiffs on a slurve. Taken out after 6 2/3 innings. John Schneider booed as he came out to take him out. I jokingly said in Blue Jays talk, I got the impression people have been waiting 5 months to do that as a result of the decision during the playoff game. I think it's safe to say that had he been left to his own devices, Jose Berríos probably would not have taken himself out of last night's game. Mm-hmm. You don't mind? I don't mind seeing my starting pitcher being a little chapped when he comes out of the game. Kevin, this is 3 starts now. You know, we've talked about Jose Berríos being very dependable, very consistent. Mm-hmm. This is statistically a really good start for him.
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of that is determined because of fastball command, right? When you're throwing the fastball where you want it to go.
Does he look different to you from the guy we've seen in the past?
No, I don't think so. I think he's got a lot more confidence. I think cleaning up the mechanics was a big deal. I just talked about timing as a hitter. Mm-hmm. Pitching's no different, right? It's the how do you get it to the stretch? That's the ball out of the glove, foot hits the ground. Ball is where you want it to be before you actually start sort of your little mini windmill to catch it out front and release the baseball. It's the timing of that. You go through the windup. It's very hard to repeat that, right? Then ball goes everywhere you don't want it to go. He's cleaned that up. You know, off season, I think it was of last year. Now he pitches solely out of the stretch. It's repeatable. Have the same release point. Now you can work both sides of the plate. You work both sides of the plate, and now he's having a little extra toy that he can start throwing, you know, up and in with the cutter. He can backdoor the cutter. It's a nice little weapon for him. But whenever he's doing the sinker to both sides of the plate and he can elevate it and he can keep it down the way he was last night, that sort of finds the release point for the slurve. He had 3 different curveballs in my mind last night. He was changing speeds on that. One looks sort of like a 12-6. That was a little slower. He had the slider. You can actually see that if you're watching. It looks like a slider. Mm-hmm. And then he had the actual slurve that he throws all the time. So, yeah, he was doing some things on the mound, I think, that normally maybe he wasn't capable of doing. But I just think the mechanical soundness of everything that's taken place before he releases the baseball.
And that started last year, didn't it?
I think so. And the confidence. Like, right? And, you know, getting the opening day start, I think that told him a lot. And, you know, obviously with Kevin Gausman being on the shelf helped a little bit. But, you know, getting the opening day start, sort of told him the way the season ended last year, and now he's the opening day starter. He's oozing confidence. That allows him to, you know, be a sort of a different Berríos. When a guy takes him, you know, out of the game and he doesn't like it, and he doesn't want to come out, he can show the frustration. And I think we're starting to see him evolve into maybe a little bit better Berríos. I said this at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to be that 3.5 ERA guy. Can he be close to the 3 ERA guy? Can he give you 20 quality starts?
Funny, because we had on Blue Jays Talk last night a caller from Minnesota who called up and who follows the Twins and was a big Jose Berríos fan. And he wanted to know if we thought there would ever be a time where you would consider Jose Berríos to be an ace. And you know, I think your point is define ace. I mean, the definition, to me, the way the baseball is going right now, an ace is somebody who's going to give me 20 starts, maybe, because guys are falling like flies. All kidding aside, though, there's something more I need to see from him before I would call him an ace. I don't even know if it really matters. I don't know if it really matters. There's still a little something more I need to see from him, and maybe it's closer to what you're talking about, getting an ERA closer to 3.
He's pitched a lot. I think sometimes when, you know, you get in a certain amount of at-bats, you get, you know, you played a certain amount of time at the big league level, you've made, you know, enough starts, I think you are what you are. Like, being an ace might be
It's not bad.
It might be too much to ask, right? Yeah. I mean, again, he's throwing more strike ones. He is a little bit better because the extra little added pitch. You know, the unpredictability when it comes to two strikes, be a little bit more efficient.
He threw the cutter six times.
That's enough. Like, you're throwing it to certain guys in certain counts, you know, in certain times of the order. May not be the first time through, might be the second time through.
Got a couple of fouls. You've never seen it before. A couple of fouls off. And I mean, you want to put it in the hitter's mind, right?
You ain't going to abuse that pitch. It's all about when you throw it. It's just another weapon to go to. I'm not saying it's going to turn him into something, you know, some elite kind of pitcher. Which he is predictable when it comes to getting the ball every five days. It's just the extra, you know, can he give you the extra little? Mm-hmm. And I look, again, he's pitched a lot. I think he is what he is. Is he going to punch out 10 or 12 a start? Probably not.
Probably not.
But he's going to, you know, he's going to take the sting out of the bat. I think that's what you want. He'll be efficient. He won't fall behind as much. He'll control the running game. He's very athletic on the mound. Like, man, I mean, look. If you give him the ball other than somebody else in your rotation, you're going to yell and scream about that?
Right now, I don't think
it's fair to say, can he be an ace or can he be an ace? Just be happy that he's taking the ball every 5 days. I think that's what we're seeing. And for him to actually be willing to make mechanical adjustments as much as he's pitched and actually be willing to add a pitch, because sometimes he has a little tough time against a lefty. That will, you know, in a key spot, he could go to that and get a guy out, take the sting out of the bat, get a weak contact, and get out of an inning that normally in the past maybe you had trouble doing. I mean, if you're a Jays fan, be happy you're watching him throw every 5 days.
We've talked a lot about Jose Berríos, and, you know, I know people use the phrase good guy and all that, but he's just so solid. He's a good guy. He's just a solid dude.
Yeah.
And just a solid pitcher, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you never – one thing about Jose Berríos is I kind of get the impression I got the best that he's going to give me in that day.
Every winning team needs a Jose Berríos.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely.
Exactly. We talked just kind of half joshingly about John Schneider and getting booed.
Hmm.
Getting booed last night, taking Berríos out of the game. The tone, it was the home opener after all. The new ballpark, by the way. I mean, I thought the new ballpark looked great.
They hit a homer.
Yeah, they really did.
Absolutely.
But it was, I don't know if subdued. Yeah, subdued was the word. I found it an oddly subdued home opener. I don't think anybody, you know, Davis Schneider got a nice round of applause, the usual sus, but I didn't get, there wasn't that groundswell, you know, and I think, you know, John was booed a little bit during the intros. Apparently Guillermo Martinez was, people are telling me that. I mean, I was in the left field press box. I don't know. I didn't hear it.
Well, I think Donnie Baseball sort of, you know, putting his arm around Martinez, I think told you everything you needed to know. I like, you know, Guillermo Martinez is not the reason why they weren't hitting last year. I mean, no. I know everybody wants to point the blame, and I've been in enough clubhouses and around enough hitting coaches, you know, maybe not on as good a team as we thought the Blue Jays, especially their offense, should be, that you, that's the blame. The blame goes to the player. I know a lot of fans don't want to hear that. They'd rather point the finger and yell and scream about the coaches. I'm not saying a lot of the times the coaches help, because you can have bad coaches. But when it come to last year and the actual approaches at the plate and just what we thought talent-wise the Blue Jays lineup should be, I'm right. not sure everybody should be booing Guillermo Martinez.
No, but I think there's – this gets to a point, and again, a point a caller made last night. I think that there's – and I don't blame this on John Schneider entirely, but I do think there's a bit of a bit of an issue in general with trust around this team. I don't think, and I hate speaking for the fans because that's just such a bad, that's like a cowardly thing when reporters say, well, the fans feel this or the fans say that. That's basically a coward's way of not wanting to
but
say,
you're going
to
do it.
I feel this way.
But
that's what I'm saying,
it.
But I'm going to do it because I feel this way. I will admit I feel this way as well.
Yeah.
But I also know that the fans feel that I've talked to, that I correspond with, feel the same way. People, I think, have moved on from the playoff game. I don't think John Schneider's going to get booed every time he comes out to make
a pitching change. Well, they obviously have not
change.
Moved on.
But there's the way the organization responded to the way the season ended in terms of the news, you know, the news conferences. I don't think enough questions were answered. I don't think that the kind of fog over the decision-making process was lifted. And I really do think that a lot of people are, right now, they, you know, winning will help, obviously, but there's, you know, they've been to the playoffs 2 years in a row,
yeah.
And they've had really ugly, like, let's face it, the exits 2 years in a row have been ugly. You had a near historic collapse at home, and then you had whatever happened last year. I think there's a trust issue here. I don't know if fans trust this team.
Yeah, I think if you're going to hear front office and manager say out loud that the stars on this team are going to take them where they're ultimately going to end up. Sometimes I think when you say that, you sort of back yourself in the corner of home opener, your opening day starter, he's got 101 pitches. He gives it up an 0-2 bloop single to right.
And you got the bottom of the order coming up.
Maybe walk out there and say, big fella, I know you got 101 pitches. I know it's your third start. You got one more batter. I would rather see you walk off the field with your team going seven innings than I would me taking you out.
And I know
6 2/3. Maybe the outcome of just the support and the trust would be a little different. I think that's sort of where fans are at. Now, it is. I will take up for John a little bit. It is John's job to make sure that his players are healthy. I don't know why. It just seems like for whatever reason, the 100 pitch mark,
It was it.
Like, yeah. There is a certain number, I think, and there's a certain amount of batters that they face where the flag starts to be raised.
Yes.
And then you have to start thinking about going to the pen. And on the flip side of that, it worked. I think I got to remember that, too. As long as these moves are working, I think fans will accept that, right? It just didn't work in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's the deal. And I think that the for some people, seeing that move would suggest that, okay, the manager doesn't trust Jose Berríos. And I don't think that's the case, as you said.
Look, I don't think it is either.
They've got, as a matter of fact, I would argue the exact opposite. I think the manager's trust in Jose Berríos is probably matched only by his trust in Kevin Gausman right now.
Yeah, I don't think John is thinking, standing over there when this
goes. No, they've got data.
I can't wait to go out there and get booed because I know it's going to happen. Like, I'm going to make a decision to get booed.
It's
when you're going to take it. You're trying to sell a certain plan to a fan base, and then actually seeing it play out is not always the case. I think that's a little confusing to some people, including me.
Yeah. Plan. I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of it's not just this team. It's the way baseball is now. Yeah. There's a lot of buzzwords around every team. Plan, process, all this stuff. And fans just...
I'm on that side of
for the most part.
If you're going to do it, it better work.
Yeah.
And it worked.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's
a 5-2 win for the Blue Jays in their home opener. And again, game two of the three-game series goes tonight, 7:07. A reminder, tomorrow's a 3:07 first pitch. We'll be on pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Sportsnet, tomorrow's matchup is Logan Gilbert against Yusei Kikuchi. And then the Jays have the day off. And the Colorado Rockies come in for a guaranteed win weekend, as we're calling it.
Why would you say that?
Why not the Colorado Rockies?
Mm.
Unless you're going to tell me that they're going to run into more buzzsaw pitching like they did with Clark Schmidt.
Does any of them dudes got a change
yet?
I'm sure they do. Like, I know you joke about this, but when you're in a bad place and you're trying too hard, Jeff Blair could be standing on the mound.
That's definitely not true.
Okay, that I think is somewhat sort of the way it's been looking with this lineup. That's why, again, you hear John say, man, him takes look good. Like, they are just searching for positivity. And it's nothing wrong with that. You know, half of the battle is 90% you believe it. But I'm pretty good at it.
Half the battle
is... That's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with that. 90%.
Half the battle is 90%.
Of you believing. There it is, buddy. Every once in a while.
That's some Virginia Tech math.
Hey.
That's some Virginia
Whatever
Tech
gets math. You through it.
Fluke. Something to worry about. Alejandro Kirk leads the Blue Jays in at-bats with runners in scoring position. 15. Yesterday, he came up short on two occasions. Once in a double play, but he also got an RBI single.
Can I ride the fence on this one? Here's what I'm going
to
say.
You're the one that pointed it out to me yesterday.
I know, you pointed
it out to me yesterday because you knew I was going to bring it up on air.
This is what I'll say. If they have to abuse his playing time, you worry about it. If they take a step back and go, we want to see the best out of Kirky offensively that we can possibly see, track record will tell us that we have to play somebody else.
Who was it 2 years ago that kept coming up in the lineup? You remember we kept...
Chapman.
That's right.
Chapman, I mean, they'd stick him in the eight hole and
that's right.
Here he'd come with the bases loaded.
That was two years ago or last year?
It was last year.
That's right. We used to talk because John joked about it one time. But like, did you just...
Can't hide him.
I mean...
I'm not saying that's the issue with Kirky because his bat does look quicker when he's...
It looks a little more like... The last two games, it looks a little more like spring training.
In terms of his... If you're going to sell to us that it's a process and we want to get the best out of these guys, track record will tell you since, June or July of last year, that Kirky playing a ton behind the plate's not going to work out offensively. So, yeah, I think if you sort of, you know, pat that down a little bit and give him some time off, you'll see the best out of Kirky, and I'm okay with him coming up with the bases loaded a couple of times. Maybe not hitting cleanup.
One question before we take a break, because I did have a couple of people ask me about this. They wanted to talk to you about that play at third base, the overturned call, the Kiermaier throw, IKF. The runner, I believe, was Ty France, was originally called safe. It was overturned, or it was called out. It was overturned. It was obvious he was safe. What happened on that play with IKF?
Well, basically, you're fisheyeing the runner, the back runner. You're trying to turn a double play instead of getting the runner out that's right in front of you. Again, you got to remember if you're a defender and the ball's being thrown to you and a runner is running towards you, sliding to the bag. That's the key word or the key phrase, sliding to the bag. He's got to come to you. It's not the other way around. There's no sense in you getting in a hurry. Like, that's one of those in the fifth inning, right, that you got to get an out. That's the biggest thing there. Jose is starting to leave some balls up out over the plate. Now it's just about you getting an out, not about you getting two outs.
And he did try for the
well, he saw the runner going around first base going to second. I want to reach to get the out quicker so I can throw the ball to second to get two outs instead of one out. Instead of just letting the runner come to you, you drop the glove, runner slides into the glove, I at least get this out. If I throw it to second and I get that out, that's a plus. But I have to make sure I get one out.
the lead runner coming towards me.
It's a live, learn experience, right? I do it once, I screw it up, I don't do it again. It's that thing. Good teams always, most of the time, always they're human beings. That's not going to happen. But most of the time, get the play that's right in front of you. You do that, especially when Kevin Kiermaier throws a BB to you. Don't overthink it. Don't try and get two outs when you're supposed to only try and get the one out, especially what your pitcher's doing, what the dude in the outfield did to get the ball to you. You're a veteran guy. You've been around long enough to understand that, and I'm sure you won't see that again. It's baseball 101, right? It's don't reach for the runner. Let the runner slide into you. It's just an easier play that way. So I'm sure it won't happen again. And, you know, again, Jose made up for it. He made pitches when he had to make, and they got out of the inning, and you live to fight another day. But it's little things like that, right, we talk about. It's the, you know, the Vogelbachs of the world in the late in the game when you're making a comeback who don't get a secondary lead off a bag at first and gets thrown out at second by a half an inch. That costs you a run. It's little things like that, right, too, that plays are not made. But, again, good pitching makes up for woes in the outfield or in the infield.
Dan Shulman is our Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He will have the call of the game tonight, 7:07, first pitch from the Rogers Center. Dan Shulman joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. It's a good thing one of us can read the game notes.
Who could read that?
I can read it.
Superman.
Maybe you ought to get some specs.
I'm good.
Maybe you ought to get some specs. It is Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. We will be doing Blue Jays talk.
What do I think of that?
Following tonight's game as well on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hopefully a winning edition of Blue Jays.
Oh, it will be.
Much as we had a winning edition last night.
Kirby's filthy,
5-2.
Though.
Kirby is filthy. This would be a... Now, I don't want to suggest this would be a good night for the Jays lefty hitter to do something, but George Kirby, righties are slashing 154, 154, 308 so far this season. I know, small sample size, but work with me on this. No extra base hits. Lefties, 310, 353, 414 with three doubles. All eight runs allowed by George Kirby have been driven in by left-handed batters. Paging Kevin Biggio and Dalton Varsho.
Hey, he likes his curveball, that knuckle curveball. He likes to throw to lefties. You know, he's trying to buy into strike the ball, eliminate and swing and miss, that kind of thing if you're, you know, facing some lefties. So I don't know. He's a fill-the-zone-up guy. Yeah. For me, I'm trying to pull everything. I ain't trying to go the other way. I ain't trying to finesse anything to right. I ain't looking for something middle of the way. I'm getting the foot down, and I'm getting the head out, and I'm trying to pull everything. This guy's got nasty stuff. That's what you do against nasty guys that throw stuff that he's got. Try and pull everything.
Dan Shulman will have the call of the game tonight. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Mr. Shulman, as always, we greatly appreciate your time. What did you make of the reception the manager received last night? Like I had someone ask me, can you remember a manager being...
That was me.
I had other people ask me, too.
I ask you that.
Yeah, if you could remember a manager being booed as much.
Yeah.
And I can't. Not in a home opener. Generally in a home, and frankly in a home opener, everybody's usually a little tipsy by that point. They're happy. Baseball's back. Spring is in the air.
Yeah.
You know, we just had an eclipse and the world didn't end. I mean, there was a lot to be happy about last night. But how surprised were you to see and hear that reaction?
Well, the only time I heard it was when he came to get Berríos. I don't know if it happened another time. If it did, I missed it. I think that was just kind of a reaction to last year, I guess. And to be honest with you, in the moment, I didn't even think that. And Buck kind of made eye contact with me like, like that's what this was. So I assume that's what that was. And then, listen, everybody knows that. You know, the fans were very unhappy at the end of last year, and we've all got long memories and that sort of thing. So I thought a tiny bit of it was, hey, he was pitching great, give him a chance to get through seven. But I'm assuming that Buck was right, and it had to do with last year. So, you know, in that vein, I guess it's not that surprising, because we all know the fan base wasn't happy at the end of last season, wasn't happy during the offseason with the moves that were or weren't made. And then I'm sure they weren't thrilled with the road trip at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I've got my headset on, too, not to avoid your question, but I've got my headset on, and sometimes you guys might hear things 100 times better than I'm hearing things. So, but if it was about Barrios and last year, I guess it makes sense, and I assume it's kind of a one-and-done thing. Like, if the exact same outing happens for Chris Bass tonight and Schneider 7, I don't think we'll hear the same reaction.
Dan, do you think that this will, in when this has to happen again, you think if John continues to get booed, he's a human being. Now, I know John pretty well. You know John pretty well. Do you think this would affect what he is trying to do with a pitcher? What I mean by that is, if he continues to get booed, maybe in certain situations you wouldn't go get him because you feel like, you know, you may be getting booed, and that's not a good thing. Am I on to something, or is that just overreaction and that would never happen?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't think it's going to continue. And even if it does continue, I don't think he would do that.
Yeah.
Like, I understand your question, obviously, but I don't think he would do that. I think John Schneider does what he believes is best for the team. And you know, for those who got on him, and Buck and I talked about it, I think it was one of the games in the Yankee series, I believe. Maybe it was the game they won in the Houston series.
Yeah.
You know, bringing in Jimmy Garcia against the top of the order. I think he came in against Judge and Rizzo, I guess. You know, then using Richards, not going to Mesa, because if Mesa didn't get Soto, then he'd have to face Judge, and having Chad Green for the ninth inning. Like, you know, I get how all this works, obviously, but we shouldn't ignore the stuff that works, right? The stuff that he's doing that is going well. And I think he's got a very good feel for his pitching staff and his bullpen right now, especially when you consider they don't have Swanson or Romano. Like,
yeah,
they're missing their number one and their number two. And you know, Jimmy Garcia and Chad Green are really good, but if everybody'd been healthy, those guys are 3-4 in some order, in my mind. So I don't think it'll continue, and if it does, I don't think it's really going to eat at him, Kevin. I don't believe so.
Yeah, it's my I'm with you. I'm with you guys on that. As my friend Mr. Barker pointed out, it worked last night.
Yeah, they won.
They won the game 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
We had a caller on Blue Jays Talk last night. It's the second time I've referred to this caller, because it was a Minnesota Twins fan, a guy who lives in Minnesota, big Jose Barrios fan. And he asked us a question that kind of got us thinking. He said, do you think Jose Barrios will ever be recognized as an ace? And he was going back to, at one point, the Minnesota Twins were talking about Jose Barrios as being an ace. Kevin and I both said, I mean, what's an ace these days? Anyhow, like, is there a certain statistical measure you use to define an ace? I told Kevin, the way pitchers are getting hurt right now, to me, an ace is a guy who's going to be in the clubhouse tomorrow healthy. That's, you know, to me, that's an ace. But is there another level, do you think, Danny, that Jose Barrios can reach?
I think it's possible. I mean, he's looked great this year, three starts in a row. I thought maybe the most impressive start was the middle one, because he didn't have his best stuff. He wasn't locating well. He didn't feel he had any life on his fastball. And then you look up at the end of the game, and that was against Houston, right? That was against Houston, and he's given up one run in six innings to that lineup. So I think he's had three great starts before. You know, 2 years ago, you could have flipped a coin between Gausman and Manoah. So ace to me implies that's the guy you're giving the ball to in game one of a playoff series.
Yeah.
You know, he's a legit number one. He gets mentioned among the best pitchers in the game, and you're giving him the ball in game one. In 2022, you could have flipped a coin, I think, between Gausman and Manoah. And, you know, Manoah started opening day last year. So, you know, that shows you what they thought of him in 2022. Last year, obviously, Gausman was the ace. You know, finished third in Cy Young balloting. Barrios had a really good season. But to me, the discussion was Barrios and Bassett, who's two, who's three. Sure, he can be an ace. Absolutely. But I don't think that's the kind of evaluation you make now. I think for the most part in his time in Minnesota, that he was viewed as like a really good number two.
Mm-hmm.
But can you stack him up against the other aces and feel pretty good about your chance to win the game? I think he can now. And as I always say, Kevin, I defer to you. You see it through a hitter's eyes, but I think his stuff is great. And, and you know, when he's locating the slurve down and away to the righties, when he's running the two-seamer either in on their hands or backdooring it to the outside corner, when he's got the changeup worked into the lefties, I said it last night, he's got all the weapons, right? It's let him fiddle with a cutter, and that's great. Maybe it'll help him, but he's got a lot of weapons already. But sure, I think he could become the ace. But to me, the definition is has a terrific season, acknowledged as one of the best around, and no doubt about it, this guy's getting the ball in game one of a playoff series. And, you know, I don't want to walk away from Kevin Gausman because he had one, rough start in New York. Kevin Gausman has earned the right, in my mind, to be thought of as the ace of this staff. And it would be, you know what, if we're having a conversation in September about which one of these two guys is the ace, then it's gone pretty well for both of them.
Dan, what do you think they do with Dalton Varsho? He's sitting 133. He's got four hits. You know, some guys would say it's early. If you ask Dalton, I'm sure he's not going to say that. What do you think they do with him?
I think so. I think some of it is matchup dependent, and like George Kirby's another 96 at the top of the zone kind of guy, right? So Varsho struggles up there. Biggio at times struggles up there, but I think he's gotten better up there than he used to be. Davis Schneider can struggle up there. So I think some of it is matchup dependent, but I think you might see between Biggio, Schneider, IKF, Clement, Varsho, Kiermaier, those six guys, maybe on any given night, four of them are in the lineup, right? And if it's a lefty, one of the left-handed bats will sit. That's easy. Maybe two of them. You know, maybe sometimes you want your best defense on the infield, depending on who your pitcher is. Maybe sometimes you want your best defense in the outfield, depending on who your pitcher is, if he's a fly ball guy. I know we always talk about offense first, but, the defense matters too. But at this point, you know, I think he will sit sometimes unless he gets the bat going. But I would say the same thing about anything else. I'm really curious to see who's in the lineup tonight because of the stuff Kirby has. And, you know, David Schneider came up with a couple of hits last night. And it's to me, it's not just one of those two. Somebody else could hit, and they've got the flexibility to move people around. But I would guess, Kevin, that it's I don't know what the number is. Four starts a week, maybe five out of the six or seven games. But they need the offense. So I think they're looking to all the guys to see if they can swing the bat. But I really hope he gets it going.
Me too.
You guys probably know, he can be hard on himself. You know, he wants so badly to help this team. He's as popular a guy and as good a guy as there is in that clubhouse. And I really hope he can get it going. If he can just do what he did for Arizona 2 years ago, then he helps them tremendously because the defense of the base running early.
Yeah, it really, to me, the importance of his bat this year is even more pronounced than it was last year, just because of the way the lineup is. I mean, he should be. I mean, I can't say this any other way. He should be their best left-handed bat. I mean, I think that's what the Jays need him for, or that's the way they had it planned out. But I don't think he is.
The way they had it planned out. Yeah, they had him hitting fifth, right? And then we're 11 days into the season, and Kevin Biggio was hitting fifth. And Biggio's hit better than Varsho right now. So Varsho was seven, and Kiermaier was nine. You know, and the other thing, too, and again, it's righty-righty-righty-righty, top four. I don't see that changing. And then sometimes I think you might see Jansen or Kirk hitting fifth. And then I wonder if there's even room for three lefties in the lineup, even if it's a right-handed pitcher on the mound, because now you're looking at them 6-7-9 or 6-8-9, and I don't know if they want that. And that's where David Schneider and Ernie Clement come in. Like, at some point, you just throw out the window, he's a lefty, he's a righty, and say, he's swinging better than him, or he gives me better defense than that guy, too. So, but I do want to say, again, very quickly, I know we always look at the offense, But I can tell you, they do, obviously, they look at the defense, too. And, you know, for the ground ball pitchers, they want to make sure the right guys are on the infield. For the fly ball pitchers, they want to make sure the right guys are in the outfield within reason. So that's part of the decision-making process as well.
Yeah. You know, Danny, other than that 450-foot home run that he hit on opening day, I thought Kevin and I were watching the game last night when Vladdy hits that double. That might be the nicest swing I've seen from Vladdy since then. It almost looked... Kevin talks about how Justin Turner, the finish to his swing and how it looks just kind of effortless. I almost saw the same thing with Vladdy in that double.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for doubles to the opposite gap, whether you're a righty or a lefty. And I know that to hit more home runs, generally speaking, guys have to pull the ball. That's obvious. We saw Vladdy hit a ton of fly balls, like 390-foot outs last year to center field. And I'm kind of caught in between on how I think about this, because it looked to me like in the Houston and New York, in the beginning of the New York series, he was pulling off, trying to pull the ball, like hips or shoulders opening up, flying open, whatever you want to say. And when he stays in there and he hits it hard to right center or center, he looks great, and he scorches the ball. It doesn't go out very often because it's usually a line drive, but he scorches the ball. And I wonder if he's kind of caught in between. Do I want to put my best swing on the ball, or do they need me to hit home runs because I'm Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? And I don't know if this is an internal battle for him or not. I don't, you know, and again, Kevin, this is your department. Is he on time? You know, have his hands quieted, like mechanically? Is he better now? But I'm with you. I thought he's looked better. You know, he scorched one to left center a couple of games ago and then one to right center. And he's looked better the last three games than he looked the previous four or five. I also know nobody goes under a microscope more than this guy when we talk about hitting. Right. And you know, that's the burden of greatness, right? That's the burden of talent. And it's fairly or unfairly to Vladdy, he's going to be dissected his whole career like that.
Dan, did you see batting practice yesterday? And if you could you tell the ball was carrying any differently than it was last year? I know we'd had conversations with other guys in the lineup that were saying, you know, the ball carry going to right. And it just made me think when you were talking about the ball the other way from some right-handed hitters, ball not carrying to right center. Did you see any of that? Have you heard conversations? Do you know anything about how the ball is carrying to right field at the Rogers Center?
I didn't notice or ask about that yesterday. I'll make a point of doing it today. The one thing I noticed yesterday is Justin Turner was taking ground balls at second base, which I thought was interesting. So now he played four or five games last year there for the Red Sox, but they were decimated by injuries. And maybe there were two guys at every position. So I can't remember who was over at third. Maybe they just wanted IKF or Ernie or whomever it was to go over to third. And Justin said, okay, I'll go over to second. It might be nothing, right? So that's the only thing I noticed. I didn't notice if the ball was carrying. It was, you know, as you guys know, a crazy day down there. And there was a lot going on. So I got up to the booth a little bit earlier than normal because I didn't get as much done early on as I would have liked. But it'll be a normal day. Two is a normal day. I'll go down there and ask some questions today and let you know what I find out.
Dan, do you think Pete Walker might be a little nervous about Tim Mesa? Tim Mesa's ball just looked like it's not coming out hot the way it should or the way it normally does. He's thrown a lot. He's been really good for a very long time. You think there's any worry with him?
I think I don't know if the word would be worry. I think they're closely monitoring the situation, and I've asked several people, including Mesa, and there's no injury. The velocity has not been quite what it's been in the past. Now, Tim's not a 95-96 guy.
No.
He's kind of 92-94, I would say, somewhere in there. You know, let's call it 93. And he's been more like 90-91, although his last couple of times out, it's crept up a little bit. But I think in part because of that, he's been throwing more sliders than I've ever seen him throw. You know, when Tim Mesa's Tim Mesa, he's like 80% sinker, right? So because he can bury people. So, you know, I think both he and Yenesis Cabrera are not at their best right now. And, you know, there's been so much talk about the offense. And then, you know, Bob Francis had a couple of rough starts and injuries to important guys. There hasn't been a whole lot of conversation about the two lefties, but they're important because, you know, just about every team has one or two good left-handed bats. My feeling about what I've been told is they think he's fine. It's just taken him a little bit longer to ramp up. And John Schneider, when he was asked about him yesterday or 2 days ago, I can't remember, I think 2 days ago, or did use the phrase, you know, and he's getting a little bit older. And it made me go upstairs and look up how old Tim Mesa was. I was close, but I would have thought 30 or 31, and he's 32. And maybe it just taken him a little bit longer to ramp up. So I don't think they're worried about him, but I think Pete's keeping a watchful eye on him.
Yeah.
Danny, really good of you to do this. Always great to talk to you, my friend. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Thanks buddy.
As always.
We will see you at the ballpark. See you guys.
See ya.
Dan Shulman. Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. 7:07 first pitch tonight. 3:07 tomorrow. It's work from the dome day.
Yep. Yeah, the Mason thing's
we'll be here working. But
yeah,
people
the Mason thing's interesting just because of how they have to use him. He's coming in against the best left-handed hitter on the other team, which is not the easiest of at-bats. That's why the 93-94 is very important. 90-91, you can let that travel. You could take the sinker that you don't want to swing at. 93-94, I'm cheating to get the head out. I swing at things I don't want to swing at. That's why it's so important to see that. And when you don't see it, that's why you see the uptick in the slider usage. And his slider's not good enough to abuse it. He just can't throw it all the time. That's why he needs both. So it is, and that's why you see sometimes with the Cabrera thing, that would be nice to see him come in and sort of take over some of the spots until Tim figures out whatever Tim needs to figure out. So there is some worry there, I think. And that may be why they use Trevor Richards a little bit more because he can get the lefty out. That's why Swanson's so important when he gets back, because you can use him against lefties with the split finger. So there is some ironing out they need to figure out at the back end and sort of just get everybody healthy and raring and ready to go. And so they can use them whenever they want to use them. But you pitch them a lot. And that's why just the up and down all the time of the bullpen is an issue, right? And that's why the starter is so important.
Yeah, it is a, you know, and we'd noticed this in his early outings this year. You get the sense he's not, and Danny's right, I don't get the sense he's hurt, but there you get the sense that he's not feeling like himself. You can just see him on the mound. There's a real sense of frustration. I think it was an outing against the Yankees, there was one against Houston where you could see he was frustrated. And yeah, it's, you know, look, he and Yenesis Cabrera, you know, they're being counted on in the absence of Eric Swanson. Because you just can't rely on you can't rely on poor Trevor Richards.
It's almost like
maybe you can actually given the way he's
what
pitched.
He's doing in the pen before he comes in the game is different than what he's seeing when he's in the game.
Right.
And whatever, maybe he needs to adjust routines. He's thrown a lot, right? It's you know, sometimes
I didn't realize he was 32. Did you?
Yeah, I did. Like that's really? Again, okay. But they've thrown him a lot. The heart rate goes up again. Yeah, Yordan Alvarez is in the world. It's not the easiest guys to get out, right?
He was
you remember
29ers.
the five. Man, infield where you're needing a ground ball against Tucker.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Kevin Barker's he's facing. It's the best left-handed hitters that they got on the other team, which are really good against the really good lineup. So I hope he figures it out. He's a good dude. You know, he means a lot to that team, a lot to that bullpen. So I'm sure he will figure it out. It's just how they go about it.
I want to ask you, because you asked Danny the question about Dalton Varsho. We thought, and you saw him in spring training, and everybody talked about how good he looked in spring training.
Did look good.
He seemed he had to, it just seemed as if everything was going his way.
Hitting the ball he's supposed to hit.
And then the switch starts and the season starts.
He's a trier. There's something to that. There's a reason why I brought that up. Well, there's a reason why I brought that up with Joe Siddle yesterday, is you got a lineup full of triers. That's not the easiest thing. Why do you think Dan said that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is trying to pull everything? Front hips flying open. He's trying to hit the ball when nobody else is hitting it. Like, they're a bunch of triers. Like, they're human beings. And, you know, they're expected to carry teams for a while. Dalton's hitting in the five hole because of what he did in spring training. The expectations go up. Now I got to drive in runs. That's why they sort of ruined half his season last year by putting him in the cleanup spot to start the season. There's a lot there, right? And how do you fix it? Hopefully they just put him in the 7 or 8 spot, leave him there when he's playing, and let him try and figure it out. Again, there's no expectations with him. Try and hit 25 homers. That's it. You get on base, try and steal 20 bases. That's it. Play elite defense, whether you're playing center or left. That's it. I don't want anything else other than that. I'd like to not see you hit 130. That'd be nice, but 25 and 200, would you take that from Dalton? I would. And 20 stolen bases, I'd take that. And the way he plays defense and the way he can go first to home, you'll take that. Not everybody can hit 250 and hit 25 plus. So expectations, limit those, and you'll be all right with him.
We've got a big hour ahead. Ernie Clement of the Blue Jays joins us. Manny Ack, the third base coach at the Seattle Mariners. Lots of talk ahead. Don't forget, 7:07 first pitch tonight, 3:07 tomorrow. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker for April 9th. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight at the Rogers Center as the Jays take on the Seattle Mariners. And I don't want to waste any time. We're very pleased at this time to be joined by Ernie Clement of the Blue Jays down at the Rogers Center. Ernie, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker. Welcome back to Toronto. Welcome, I guess, day after the home opener. I just want to get your sense of just the atmosphere leading up to a home opener and an opening day in general from your point of view. How special is it? You know, I talked to Kevin, who spent a lot of time in the minors, and he talked about how special opening day was in the majors. How special is it for you?
Yeah, it was really cool. This is a special group to be a part of, and you know, especially with all the renovations and everything, it was rocking here last night. So it was really good to get away.
Ernie, how good is the behind the scenes? You mentioned the renovations. I mean, it's got to be cool to walk in a clubhouse and see that kind of clubhouse, and you know what the Rogers Center brings. How beneficial is that going to be just to make you the best player you can be?
Yeah, the amount of resources we have are it's amazing. I can't begin to tell you how awesome it is. You kind of have to see it for yourself to believe how incredible it is. But, you know, we're lucky. We're lucky, and this is a special group, like I said. So, you know, the more resources, the better, and, you know, we're going to use it to our advantage.
Ernie, one of the things Kevin always talks about when we talk about you was just is how – just how simple your swing is and how easy and easily maintainable it is. Is that something you've always had a knack for, or is that something that you had to develop as you got older?
I've always tried to keep it as simple as possible. You know, the more you have going on with your swing, the more that can go wrong. So, you know, especially over the last couple of years, I've tried to keep it as simple as possible. And, you know, I've seen some success, and, you know, I'm going to keep it rolling.
Yeah, routines are very important, especially with guys who don't play every day. How have you had to adjust routines? Have you come up with some that you're trying to figure out, iron out? You know, playing time's a big deal. When you don't play, you got to figure it out. How big of a you know, interest have you put into just trying to figure out the best routine for you?
Yeah, honestly, Matty Haig and Hunter Mentz have been awesome. You know, they got us grinded in the cage during the game, before the game, and the resources that we have available are pretty amazing. So, you know, even if you're not playing every day, there's still a ton of resources you can use, and, you know, they keep us ready to go for sure.
Yeah, Ernie, I know you know this, but you're hitting 364 off the fastball, and I'm sure opposing teams understand you're hitting 364 off the fastball. That will mean you will start to see more spin. Have you tried to figure out ways to, you know, maybe hit a couple more breaking balls earlier in count, see that a little bit longer? How have you tried to, you talk about what you're trying to do in the cage, have you tried to combat that, you know, seeing more spin in the cage? How are you attacking those kind of at-bats?
Yeah, I think I just have to stay disciplined in my approach for each individual at-bat. You know, I do my homework and I prepare, so, you know, I know the pitcher's best pitch, and most of the time I'm going up there looking for a fastball, but I'm willing to, you know, make the adjustments, and, you know, I have no problem hitting a slider or a curveball.
Ernie, you mentioned Matt Haig, and I know that you, throughout your career, you've never had a problem making contact, but I understand from reading what, you know, an article Arden Zwelling wrote in you in spring training, Matt really played a role in taking you to the next level last year, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. You know, he just does such a good job of creating a relationship with each player. And, you know, I can talk to him about anything, but at the end of the day, you know, he's a buddy of mine. And we've created that relationship over the last year or so. But his knowledge of the game and of hitting is incredible. And he cleaned up a lot of mechanical things with my my swing, but you know, my approach has been the same for the last year.
Okay, on the defensive side, you play a lot of positions. You play second, you play third, you play short, you play a little left. Like, there's a lot going on there. Which one of those positions have you had to put more thought into to make yourself really good at one of those?
You know, the left side is you got to be locked in at all times. And, you know, I've really worked on my throwing. I've never had a very strong arm, but I've learned how to throw and spin the ball, and I get really good carry across the diamond. So, you know, now I can play third and short, and I just kind of let my athleticism take over.
Ernie, sorry, Jeff, one more. How about internal clock? Right side of the infield, left side of the infield, it's the runner, right? Do you catch yourself looking at the runner? Because I have seen you, you know, get sort of a hot shot at short. You sort of peek at the runner, sort of will tell you what you're talking about. I can take a little off. I don't have to throw it as hard. Is there something to the internal clock part of it?
Well, I think at the big leagues, some guys don't run as hard as they can, so you got to take a peek at first just to see if they're busting out of the box. But, you know, before the pitch is even thrown, I know the good runners versus the not-so-good runners. So my internal clock is pretty good. So I kind of know before the pitch even happens.
Awesome.
Ernie, I know you had options a couple of years ago. What attracted you to the Blue Jays? And how did that come about? Was it you know, understanding that you were going to get fairly regular playing time at AAA and that could lead to a job in the majors?
Yeah, that's all I cared about. I just wanted to play. The last few years, including COVID, you know, I just hadn't really had the at-bats or the playing time. And I just missed playing baseball. I love this game so much. So it was just awesome to be back out there. And the guys in the clubhouse in Buffalo were incredible. And then when they brought me up here, I was welcomed with open arms, and these guys were just awesome. So, you know, I definitely made the right call.
Ernie, what's next for you? You know, you made the team. You're a contact guy. You're starting to figure out routines. You know, you're looks like you got a little bit more power now. Is that sort of the next step, right? Ambushing, maybe looking for a breaking ball early in the count. You can get out and around, create some backspin. What's next for you?
I just want to help this team win, man. I want to impact the baseball a little bit more, and that's going to help the team win. So if I can continue making hard contact, that's only going to be better for this team. And I just want to make plays in the field when I'm out there. So, you know, when they put me in there, I'm going to help this team win. That's all I care about.
Ernie, I'm wondering, last year this team's production at home wasn't great. We had Bo on earlier in spring or earlier this year in the offseason, I should say, and he was talking about how he thought that maybe guys got a little frustrated last year. How important is it to establish some sort of offensive home field advantages? And is it something you guys talk about?
Well, I think you have to take pride in playing in front of Toronto, in front of your home crowd. We pack this place out pretty good every night. So, you know, I think it's time we start taking pride in playing in front of these fans. And, you know, last night was a great start. So, you know, we're going to build off that and keep it going.
Ernie, do you have a favorite player? Do you have somebody you look at that maybe is similar to you that you can feed off of? Do you have somebody on speed dial that when you struggle, you call? Who do you talk to when it comes to that?
Well, besides everybody on our team, I love watching Jose Ramirez. I played with him in Cleveland, and the way he plays the game and, you know, respects the game of baseball, and he doesn't let a fastball get by him. So, you know, I've learned a lot from him and the way he played the game, but I'd say he's probably my favorite to watch.
Yeah, it's early sample size for you in your career facing really good pitching. Is there one guy that stands out to you that maybe – mine was Kevin Brown, you know, the fastball in, the throwing at your head, you know, he would sort of intimidate you before he actually released the baseball. Is there a certain guy that has stood out to you that you're like, man, that's some filthy stuff. I better be prepared the next time I face him.
Luis Gil kicked my butt pretty good last time I faced him. So I'd say him right now, but I'd like to face him again.
Why is that? Was it power? Was it location? Was it late movement? Why was that? All the above?
Yeah, he had a really good mix. And then, obviously, the starter from Houston the other night, Blanco, who threw the no-hitter against us, had an amazing mix. And, you know, he was hitting the corners and really didn't give in. So, you know, guys like that are tough.
Yeah.
Ernie, we're going to let you run, man. Thanks for doing this. Keep it going, my friend. Be well.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, boys. See ya.
Take care.
Ernie Clement of the Toronto Blue Jays. He is fun to watch. And I'm pointing at my friend, Mr. Barker, here, because the first time we saw him play in the field last year, you said, that guy can play in the majors.
Yeah, it's simple. I think it's repeatable.
Yeah, there was no doubt in your mind.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, he's a smart guy. I think that helps, too. That will get him through some woes. It's not going to be easy. I mean, he's not going to hit 364 off the fastball all the time. You know, he's hitting 182 against the breaking ball. Like, that mix, he talked about the mix there. I mean, he's getting about the same amount of breaking balls he is fastballs now. And the word's out, right? He's going to get breaking balls and fastball counts. He'll get crowded a little bit more. They'll move his feet. Like, they're going to do some things to make him a little bit more uncomfortable. They'll game plan against him a little bit more. They'll see if he can hit a change up in a fastball count. Like, they're going to pitch to him now, not so much throw to him. It's the graduation part of it. Everybody goes through it early in your career where they'll see if you can hit fastballs all quadrants. Now it's about the breaking stuff. And the defensive side, he's a smart guy. I think he's one of those guys that doesn't have to be told where to stand.
Yeah,
he's not going to look the dugout all the time, and they're going to have to say, move 2 feet to your right. Like, he's not that guy. He'll do his homework enough to know that, you know, certain counts, the guy hits the ball here, this is where you need to stand. You know, the fast twitch muscles that he does have helps him on the left side of the infield. And I have seen him a couple of times peek to the runner, so he does understand that he can make up for, you know, I catch it quicker. Will make up for some woes that I do have with my arm strength. Like, he's a smart guy.
But it is true, isn't it? It's something guys, when you talk to guys who've played in the minors and they come up to the majors, and they're not insulting by any stretch of the imagination, but they say that, you know, not everybody busted 100% down to first base all the time because they're told not to.
I don't know about that. I'm not sure they're told to. I mean, no coach, you know, is going to, for the most part.
I remember Luis Gonzalez having a discussion with Russell Martin about we don't need you sliding head first
Well, that's dumb. It's not because Russell wasn't running down the line. It was just you're more important to us putting the fingers down and playing 5 days a week. Don't slide into first head first. Like, that's common sense. Sometimes you got to be made aware of that. The actual running hard down the line, I've never had a coach. If you ever have a coach do that.
I guess my point is, guys in the majors, it's a long season.
Yeah, it's called lazy, Jeff. That's what it's called. No, say it like it is. It's called lazy.
Guys don't always bust it 100% down the line. They don't. And I think that's probably what Ernie was saying.
It's called lazy. Now, again, no coach is going to walk up and say, give me 50% down the line.
No. But
make it look like you care.
You'll talk to, you know as well as I do, there are guys, they're not running 100% to first base all the time. They're not going to come out and tell you that, but you can tell. They're guys that don't run 100%.
Yeah,
it's a matter of self-preservation. But what I was getting to with Ernie, the other thing I found really interesting, something we really haven't talked about that much, talking about using spin to make up for a lack of arm strength, throwing the ball across the field. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I think he's learning how to follow his throw. You know, when you play multiple positions, it's very hard to. Second base, I don't have to follow my throw. Shortstop and at third base, a lot of the times I don't have to follow my throw. Ball's hit to you so hard, I can flip it over there, create a little spin. It'll get over there because of that. Shortstop, I got to follow my throw because it's a further throw. Sometimes those balls are left or right. You know, it's more about footwork, and I have to follow my throw to make up for arm strength and accuracy sometimes. It's, you know, sort of learning on the fly. It's not the easiest thing to do. And, oh, by the way, you're not hitting as a team, so every single time the ball's hit to you, you have to make the play. It's not the easiest thing to always do. So I'll take Ernie on my team all the time. I mean, he's a smart guy. You need smart guys on your team.
And, again, you were you were on him. You were on him very early. You know by now, of course, that the Rogers Center, stage two of renovations at the Rogers Center has been completed. A lot of it had to do with the areas you don't see, the playing areas, the physical therapy areas, and, of course, the expensive seats. But there have also been some adjustments in terms of angles, in terms of less foul territory now than there was in the past. Our next guest is Manny Acta. He's a third base coach for the Seattle Mariners. And Manny, thanks for joining Kevin and myself. Yeah, I remember talking to you a couple of years ago about the job a third base coach has to do, like, before the first game of a series. You've got to go out and kind of acclimate yourself to
how guys are going to be positioned, how a ball is going to come off the wall, where you're going to get your read, where you're going to be positioned, et cetera, et cetera. Did you have to do something different before this game because of the new ballpark than you would have, you know, previous trips to the Rogers Center?
Oh, absolutely. Jeff and Kevin, hope you guys are okay, and thanks for having me on. You do go out and prepare yourself for every series. Obviously, you go and see how the ball is bouncing off the wall. And here, I had to do a lot yesterday because of all the renovations. Number one, as you mentioned, we have less foul territory. And around first base now, if a lefty pulls the ball, there's a chance it's going to hit the padding and come back out. So we have to talk to Polanco about that kind of stuff. And also, as a third base coach, you have to pay attention to that. The walls, since we only come here once a year, I hit balls up against the outfield wall. And, you know, the ball bounced really fast to the outfielders. And it only kind of deadened where he has the scoreboard in left center and the chain link fences on those little gaps. Other than that, all that kind of stuff, you have to pay attention to it. But the biggest adjustment that I had to make was, since I run our infield positioning, is that the dugouts are not in the same spot as they used to be. And when you're doing the positioning, you usually go out and mark somewhere in the outfield wall, or maybe on a sign behind the wall, be a commercial sign or whatever, where the guys are going to be standing on straight up position or heavy pull or whatever. And since he was moved, yesterday I had to come out and play some baseballs there and kind of mark it according to where I stand in the dugout and make sure that our guys are on the right position. A lot of things yesterday.
Yeah, there really is a lot. And again, I remember our discussion we had, and you pointed out that, you know, different outfielders, you'll basically tell them, hey, go and stand by, you know, we want you to stand in front of the letter E on whatever the advertisement is, right? And it's the same for every ballpark.
Yeah, they don't know. I write it down, and that's how I can move them around. That's when I know that a guy's out of position, depending on the field, too, because that's just a start or where they're going to be. As Kevin knows, you also have a feel as a player. And right. If you see that a guy's late, or you have nowadays the pitch come in your ear and you know what's coming, guys are probably going to move around. But at least the straight up position where they're going to start, I got to have an idea. And that's something that I learned a long time ago when I was in Montreal from Perry Hill, who also works here with me, and just to make sure that the guys are on the right spot, and that's something that I had to change here, because obviously the dugout moved a lot. I actually had some fans that are season ticket holders here that I always kind of talk to them during our visit here, and yesterday I could feel that they were very far away from me, and they were yelling at me, and I'm like, hey, you're far away now. But it's because of all the new construction here.
Manny, as a third base coach early in the season, do you try and set a tone for your team, like, you know, to an opposing team? We're gonna be very aggressive. Like, you're gonna have to make every single play. You're gonna have to get that first cutoff guy to get us out. Do you ever think about that early in the season, to try and do that?
We do that starting on spring training, but as you just mentioned, Kevin, at the start of the season, what we do, we address it at the end of camp, because at the beginning of spring training, a lot of the invitees and young kids are playing, so those guys are not going to be with you here. So we do it at the end of camp, and obviously nowadays with all the info that is out there and all the videos that we have, we and have a pretty good idea of the outfield arms and all that kind of stuff. But also, as you mentioned, hey, make the guy make the perfect throw, make the guys, you know, hit the cutoff man, and you know, take your chances. As long as you know how many outs there are, and you don't want to make the first one or the third one in, at third base, and the first one at home plate especially, those kind of things, yeah, we address it. Hey, put some pressure on them, especially early in the year where – here we're playing in the dome, but when you're playing outdoors with the weather and all that kind of stuff, it's not as easy to grip the ball and make a perfect throw.
Manny, do you set goals for yourself beginning of the season? Like me, I wanted to be a 270 average, 30 home run, 100 RBI guy. Do you set goals? I mean, I don't want to ask that in a silly way. I think that would be kind of cool if you were thinking, you know, maybe I only want to set my goal, you know, highly and saying that I only want to get a couple of guys thrown out at home, and you may sort of adjust how you send guys. Do you have goals at the beginning of the season for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome.
My goal, I already lost the goal. I didn't want to get anybody thrown out on the plate, but I already have one guy that would stand on a sack fly. But yes, I mean, I learned a long time ago when I was in Montreal, Omar Minaya used to tell me, hey, when a third base coach name is not coming up, no one talks about you, it means you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
If your name starts to pop up, it's because of, you know, things are not going very well. And that's a tough job, you know, because a team, even an okay team scores over 600 runs a year. And no one says anything when the guy scores. But as soon as somebody gets thrown out, oh boy, you know, who's coaching third and what did he do right and what did he do wrong? So, yeah, I do have goals, Kevin, and it's good that you pointed out. And, you know, sometimes there are times during the year where you push the envelope a little bit because your offense is down and you want to score runs. And that's where we as third base coaches make the mistake, because when the team is not scoring and you try to push stuff and try to make things happen, you make it worse.
Yeah. Manny, through your time with Washington, Seattle, Montreal, Cleveland, I mean, you've been around a lot of good young players. How would you, and I understand it's not always easy to compare guys, but I am going to ask you to compare Julio Rodriguez to some of those guys. Where would you, how would you rank him?
Well, Julio Rodriguez, I know that I'm getting up there in age, but Julio reminds me of Cesar Cedeño way back with the Astros. And I was a young kid when Cesar was playing, but he's so talented. I mean, this guy, back-to-back years, right away, right off the bat, jumping from Double-A and winning the silver slugger at that early age. And, you know, every year he seems to be maturing physically. He's a beast. And he's a guy that he had a couple of slow starts already, and right now he has another slow start, even when it's only 11 games. But he survives mainly because how talented he is. Right now he's hitting ground balls through the infield, or he'll get an infield hit just to survive up until he gets into his good rhythm. And as he goes, we go, man. We've seen that over the last 3 years. He's super talented. He's legit one of the superstars of MLB, and I put down 30 homers, 270, 280, 100 run score guy for years to come.
Manny, who is Seattle? Like, well, I think we sort of similar to the Jays, right? Got really good pitching, can play some good defense, can run the bases, but the hitting side, there's some unknowns there. What is Seattle? Who are Seattle?
Well, yeah, right now we're pretty close. I do believe that the Blue Jays had a deeper lineup than we had over the last couple of years, and probably a few more hitters, renowned hitters that people know. We rely on our pitching. Our pitching wins. I mean, we have our first three guys in our rotation could be number one in probably 25 teams in the big leagues. And that's a luxury that we have. Our bullpen over the last few years have been terrific. We have some injuries right now. We're missing Santos, and we're missing Matt Brash, who was a lights-out guy out of our pen last year. Every team has injuries, and we have to deal with it. But pitching is our thing, and we catch a ball. We have a pretty good defense that we have played over the years here. Now we have some a new kind of a platoon at third base, and we have Polanco at second base, which is different than we had in the past. But I think we're pitching. We're about pitching, catching the ball. And I would say that this is one of the best groups we had here. I've been here for 9 years. Offensively,
yeah.
It's deeper. Our lineup is deeper, more contact oriented, even if the numbers don't show that right now. It's only been 11 games. But I just think we're better than that. I know that these guys are not 180 hitters, all of them, and they're going to wake up and be better. We're leaning toward more contact this year. Polanco is a great addition to our lineup. We got a guy hitting third with a track record who's a switch hitter. And baseball is just like family and life. You know, you miss some guys that you love and you really like that were here, like Robbie Ray and Gino Suarez, Marco Gonzalez. But then you also add some guys to the mix that bring a lot to him, like Mitch Garber. You know, he's a professional hitter. The numbers are there for him, even when he's had some injuries in the past. But Garber, now having back Haniger in our team, and Polanco, those are just good additions to that young core of guys that we have here that will make us better. I mean, we are going to get into a good streak pretty soon, and we're going to be giving everybody a run for their money.
Manny, as always, it's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time. You've been very generous with it. And travel safely, my friend, and be well.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. My pleasure, guys. And see you guys down the road.
Absolutely. Take care. That is Manny Acht, a third base coach. I forgot he's been with Seattle for 9 years now. Third base coach at the Seattle Mariners, former manager, Cleveland, Washington, and go back to the days in Montreal.
Yeah.
With the Expos. I really wanted to get Manny on because, as I said, a couple of years ago, I was out at the field and we ran into each other. I was out there early and he was kind of talking me through what he does in every ballpark before every series. And it's interesting because there really is an aspect of being in baseball that is a job, and you've got to go out and stand in the third base box and say, okay, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that with the dugouts. I did not realize that but that makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's all about angles, right? It's how it looks to you when you're moving guys around to determine on who's hitting and who's pitching. I think that's funny. I used to do that as a hitter. I would go to right center and actually look for something that I could aim at while I was hitting.
So you'd walk out before the game.
Absolutely, because it's more about direction, right? I just wanted to have good direction, and the direction on the way I wanted my bat path would keep me in the zone longer and actually give me a chance of hitting a baseball hard. It's just funny listening to coaches and baseball players talk about angles and just the way it looks when you go to a place that you haven't seen just by the dugout moving. Uh-oh, it's thrown off where I want that guy to stand. Yeah. I'm going to have to actually go out there and put a piece of tape or ball or something to where I know to move them to, basically.
And it's different now, because with PitchCom, you do have – you know, you've got some players who are moving according to the pitch, and I presume people would follow off them. But I think Manny was telling me the story, and I can't remember the ballpark, but he was doing his thing. He went out, and, there's advertising logos on the wall. So, okay, I'm going to have this guy stand by the letter E and this. Goes back in the dugout, comes out, and they've changed some of the advertising. Because now he's got, okay, there's no letter E.
Yeah.
So now he got, okay, you know, remember I said about going to the letter E? Actually, now it's a K.
Yeah.
There's a lot goes on, man.
It's cool stuff.
There's a lot goes on.
Everybody's got their job, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We are going to take a break and come back with the final half hour of Blair and Barker. Get you set for tonight's second game of this three-game series, Mariners and Jays, 7:07 first pitch. It is Blair and Barker. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Half an hour left.
And what's that?
Wire right up. It's Blair and Barker. The Jays lineup is out. Better make sure that this is today's. Jays lineup is out. It is today's. George Springer is leading off in right field. Vladdy is at
third. That was interesting.
He's not at third.
First. That
let him beat you.
And not. I was thinking that was interesting. Shulman talking about Justin Turner taking ground balls
not
at
really.
Second base. Eh?
Not really. I mean, they're going to put the best offense on the field they can possibly do. Yeah. If Ernie has to play third and he's hitting, he's going to play
third. That's fair.
If that's the best lineup.
Guerrero is hitting second and playing first base.
Oh, boy.
Bichette at short. Turner. Schneider in left field. Biggio, Kirk, Kiner, Falefa, Varsho, Chris Bassett on the mound against George Kirby. So there you go. Davis Schneider draws a tough assignment.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think occasionally you just got to say, well, everybody knows what your weakness is. Go up and figure it out. He's a big leaguer now. I think that's where they're at. Like, offensively, they're looking for hope after that four guy. Then if Davis Schneider's giving them some quality at bats, I mean, he knows what it is. It's
right.
Up to you to make the adjustment. That's what the big leagues is. Big leagues not hard getting there. It's hard staying there. He's sort of in that mix now of staying there, and he's going to have to make some adjustments. Don't have to hit that pitch all the time. Nobody's perfect.
Are you surprised given the issues Kirby's had against lefties, are you surprised that Kiermaier's not in the lineup tonight?
I mean, do the Jays have a good left-handed hitter?
Well, that was a topic of conversation
Kevin will give you a decent at bat. Kiermaier, when he's not trying to hit homers, will give you a decent at bat. Dalton Varsho, he's having his issues with a lot of things. I mean, until he actually tries, I think, to take a deep breath and exhale. And just sort of see ball, hit ball. I know.
Kevin,
don't roll your eyes. It's possible for some people. It has to simple. I think he's one of those guys that just has to,
What happens if Dalton Varsho doesn't figure it out?
I don't think anything. I think he'll.
Like, what happens?
I think he'll play defense late in games. I think he'll get the occasional start. I think he'll hit ninth when he does start, or eighth.
Which, as we're seeing tonight, he's sitting
there. I said, you just don't think that he can do what he can't do. Just think that. Try to go up and hit the ball hard to the pull side. That's all you want. And play great defense.
See,
it'll work out.
And I think I think initially when you make a deal like that, when you've traded away.
Yeah, some would say that.
Some have said that. When you've traded.
This show said that.
When you've traded away Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Gabriel Moreno, man,
can't believe
man,
you said that.
I can't either. But when you've traded,
hopefully Ross is not listening.
When they've traded them away, just stop it. When you've traded them away and you bring Dalton Varsho in, there would be the natural inclination that they've brought him in to be an important part of the team, an integral part of the team, right? Which is why we saw him. I mean, to work with me on this, Parker, which is rescue me here, which is why we saw him hitting cleanup and the fist spot, and now he's down. Now he's down in the ninth hole.
I don't know which khaki was raising their hand, going, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's put Dalton Varsho in the cleanup spot." Yeah, that's one of the worst things they've ever done. I think you sort of think defense first, and then whatever he gives you offensively is gravy. I think that's sort of where they're at right now. Don't make the
so we're settling for. There's
the
not a lot of
so
meat.
High.
There's not a lot of meat there. We're just settling for gravy.
Absolutely. It's sort of. He's a really good defender. He's a really good base runner when he's on base, and sort of gloves off when he gets on. Just tell him don't be afraid. Like, run the bases the way with some, recklessness occasionally. It's okay to try and steal second. You got the green light. Just give
I'm gonna
him.
Remember that.
Sort of
if
let
he ends
him be
up,
himself. That's all I'm
well,
saying. Let him get on there and let it eat occasionally. If they do that,
I was gonna say if he runs in and out. But one of the things with Dalton is he is a good.
He's a very good.
Yeah,
base
I know.
Runner.
I just I, like Dan. Danny made the point as well. I mean, he's a superior. Defensive. He's one of the best defensive outfielders we've seen in Toronto.
Left
he's
and
really good.
That's hard to come by.
He's really good. And, in your perfect world, because Kevin Kiermaier is not going to be here for another 3 years, in your perfect world, Dalton Varsho might be your center fielder. But, man, Kevin,
I would love for somebody to tell him stop stride separating. That's hard to do. Stride separate means you start, stop, start again. Momentum, you're trying to start.
What would you do then?
Not do that. I'd rather have him have a little mini leg kick and try and pull everything.
But he had leg kick before.
Yeah, it's
wasn't that one of the issues last year?
He's trying to flatten out his swing a little bit more by stride separating. A lot of people stride separate with two strikes. It's really hard to do that OO against guys who can attack weaknesses. It opens up the weakness more by stride separating. Stride separating, you basically just trying to throw barrel to ball. Most people do that with two strikes. Eliminate that. Have a leg. Nobody cares if you punch out. Nobody's saying you're a great hitter. They just want him to run into 20-plus and steal some bases. To do that, you have to have consistent momentum. Lift it. He's like a collision guy. He can be basically a turner, not as good a hitter,
right,
but I'm saying the approach and the mindset of I lift the leg and I'm trying to throw everything I possibly can at the point of contact to the baseball instead of always trying to have the perfect swing. You can sort of see it. He's trying to be perfect all the time with his mechanics, and it's impossible. I don't think he's capable of that. That's why I said simplify that thing. Let him pick it up, set it down, let it eat. Try that, and maybe it'd work out for him.
Now, I got a lot of grief going into this series from my colleague, Mr. Barker, here, because while everybody was singing the praises of the starting pitching the Jays ran into in the first 10 games of the season, I pointed out that, you know, with all due respect to the pitchers they did see, they were really going to...
Well, struggled at the plate.
They were going to see... Well, no.
No.
But they were going to see... They were going into the jaws of the beast with the Seattle Mariners coming in town with Luis Castillo, George Kirby, and Logan Gilbert. Tonight it is George Kirby on the mound as the Mariners attempt to even the series. Dave Sims is the Mariners play-by-play voice. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Dave, as always, it's great to talk to you. Trust that you're doing well. I know you're doing well. I saw you last night at the ballpark. You dropped in the middle of Blue Jays talk, which it's always... It's always great to see you. It's okay. It was a good question. I was in the middle of a thought anyhow. So it didn't matter, if you know what I mean. We've all been there. Hey, George Kirby, I'm looking at his numbers. Why the difference in splits? Or I should say, why the difference in platoon?
In terms of what? The third
right-handed hitters against left-handed versus left-handed hitters.
I hadn't even really looked at it. You know, generally, yeah, he's been good. Well, first of all, nobody's been great so far, the pitching staff. I think he's got like 4 or 5 pitches. And, you know, the command, just like Luis, the command has not been what we had anticipated coming into this season. And the other, his last outing, you had a couple bleeders get out there and a couple bleeders, then a knock, and next thing you know, it's like 3-4 runs, you know, an uncharacteristic walk or two, and that's what we have. To be honest with you, I haven't really looked that closely into those splits. I just know we got a myriad of things to look at that aren't working, so I hadn't even locked in on that one yet.
Dave, I heard he was trying to have more chase rate. Can he do that being a attack the strike zone guy with 4 or 5 different pitches?
Well, that's one of the things they're looking for him to do. It's like he wants to throw everything over the plate and basically, hey, you and me, pal, let's do this and let's get it over with quickly. And he's got to, you know, as he matures, he's getting better at it. He's not great at it, but, you know, he's got to throw some stuff off the plate to get that chase rate. And he's used to just pound, you know, he's just relentless at pounding the strike zone.
You
got to make that adjustment.
Yep.
What were the expectations for the Mariners this year and Where do you think they see themselves? Kevin, we had Manny Act on, and Kevin asked Manny about sort of what are the Mariners right now, and we kind of tried to draw a comparison with the Blue Jays.
Yeah,
where are they, and what do you see when you see this team?
Well, coming in from the off season into being down in Arizona in February and March, starting pitching more specifically. That it was going to be, you know, maybe not lights out, but darn close. Could see it from there, as Bob Phillips used to say. It's 10 games, 11 games. It's not freakout factor time by any stretch of imagination. This club over the last couple, 3 years, maybe 3-4 years, has gotten off the sort of meh kind of starts in the month of April. And then, you know, there's a trigger month. Last year it was August. A couple of years ago it was June.
So, you know, we'll see. The command got service yesterday going into the Luis game yesterday. Said stuff is good. The command is not bad. The execution hasn't been as good. And then the hitting, those numbers speak for themselves. You got all these guys on the interstate. And if they're not on the interstate, they're not hitting more than 220 and with no pop. And of course, the three dudes that they got rid of because they struck out too much, Kelnick's having a hell of a start. what do you thought? Teoscar Hernandez, I looked, he had, when I looked yesterday, he had something like four or five home runs with 19 strikeouts, 14 RBI. And Suarez had probably a handful of home runs. So it's a big turnaround, you know. And, you know, you move those guys, and they're all great guys, but, you know, you bring in some guys who are going to strike a little bit less, and yet we're still at the top.
It's funny hearing you say that, because Kevin and I were both talking about, you know, when the Teoscar deal was made, we kind of went, you know, I mean, we like Teoscar. They're not going to sign him long-term anyhow. They'll figure it out. And now Teoscar's leaving. It's the same thing in Seattle. You're going, you know, maybe... Yeah, the strikeouts are a thing in Toronto. It was the uncertain defense, but, you know, you look up at the stats, you go, he's still hitting. I mean, he's still hitting.
Yeah, and, you know, and I kept hearing from, I don't know if it's from you guys, but people up here and then all the analytic guys, people are super into analytics. And, you know, he made it sound like he was some drunk in right field. I mean, hardly the case. I mean, you know. He wasn't. I grew up in Philly, and Johnny Callison was a very good right fielder.
Yes.
You know, Billy Williams, great right fielder. He was, you know, Teo was good. You know, early on, he took a couple of bad angles, but all in all, for the entire season, I thought he did a hell of a job in right field.
Dave, you don't think there's any worry about the lineup? Because the Blue Jays sort of have a different approach, too. It is swing at what you can do damage on. It sounds like the Mariners sort of have a different approach, right? They want to have a two-strike approach. Well, they want to put the ball in play. You think they can do that and make a little run at this thing?
Well, it starts with hitting some damn breaking balls. You know what? And if he's going to throw a breaking ball, how about talking to Mike Blowers on our telecast last night? At some point, don't you have to go up there sitting on breaking ball, have a player sit on the damn thing?
Yeah.
You're not going to get fastball cookies right down the middle. And you know they're going to be working your way. They're going to be working you inside. They're going to show you one fastball up high and one away. But they're going to throw one that you can do damage on. You go up there and, you know, sit on a breaking ball. Now, and I like that. I like that way of thinking. I mean, that, you know, I deferred to Mike on that. I said, you're the one that played at this level. But I think I know a little bit about baseball. If they're throwing on these damn breaking balls, sit on them and start hitting them. Mm-hmm. And they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Dave, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much, man. It's always great to talk to you. Always great to see you as well. You know that. Yeah. Be well.
See ya.
Appreciate that. Same to you guys. Be well. Take care.
Good luck.
Take
Have
care.
Fun.
Dave Sims, the tremendous voice of the Mariners.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was funny last night. He came in the middle of Blue Jays talking to shake hands.
Yeah, run prevention's hard, Jeff. Like, it's not the easiest thing to do.
But it's funny, isn't it? What did Dave say when you asked about the offense? Breaking pitches, like off-speed pitches.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's when you're married to an approach and you're trying to sell that as an organization, and then it doesn't work and you have a little hiccup, how do you get everybody bought into it? Like, you can say the damage thing. The word damage could mean a bunch of different things to a bunch of different kind of hitters. You got to get these guys married to the same kind of approach, and it's not the easiest thing to do when it's not working. It just doesn't seem like what they're trying to do, right, is – you know, sometimes you got to get it down, look for a certain pitch, and trying to hit the thing out of the yard.
Yeah.
That you know, not just put it in play where nobody can catch it. Like, and you just got to get a bunch of guys buying into that, and it's not the easiest thing to do because it is about numbers. Like, guys are, you know, it's not easy this time of the season to look up and dudes ain't hitting 200. It's just average matters a little bit. It's not the be-all, end-all. But it does matter to some people, especially early in the season, because you'd like to get off
big
a good
numbers
start.
And everybody sees the big numbers on the scoreboard.
Yeah, well,
everybody
the scoreboard's
sees
really
the
big, too.
Big
the
numbers
Center,
on the scoreboard.
It's really big.
How about...
can't hide from it.
So we can add another team to the missing Teoscar Hernandez list.
I mean...
Sometimes the devil you know.
Cleanup hitters don't grow on trees. And, you know, it's that, again, it's that, can he help the guy around him? Could he help Vladdy? Conversations after Vladdy has a bad at bat.
Why do I I'm feel?
Saying,
why
I
do I
roll
feel
my eyes
like
and
I,
say it's silly? But
why do I feel like I just really misread his importance? Like, honestly,
it's the baseball IQ. It's running into outs. It's fans throwing their hands in the air. It's us taking calls on Jay's Talk, listening to it, instead of going, you know, nobody's perfect. But it's nice to see, you know, him against a good pitcher take a breaking ball and hit that thing in the second deck in right center field because nobody else on planet Earth can do it
There's
like that.
There's a bit of a fear factor to him.
No question. No question. Both ways. And, you know, it just seems to me like organization and player didn't get along. One's headed in one direction, one headed in the other.
I mean, he's
instead of just going, sometimes you just need a dude running into an out.
Olte Oscar's falling.
And looking like a little leaker.
Olte Oscar's
falling. Because he can hit.
Olte Oscar's falling into a pretty good spot right now.
Don't forget about me. I can hit.
My goodness.
That's it. I mean, he's probably going to drive in 90. He's probably going to hit close to 35-ish. Hitting in the sixth or seventh hole for probably the second best team in baseball. It's not bad.
We didn't talk about this. This happened a little earlier today, but it is a significant occurrence for the American League East. Boston Red Sox look like they're going to be without Trevor Story for the rest of the year. Nick Pivetta went in the IL today as well. You know, and there's no concrete indication yet as to how long that DL stint will be. But, man, I mean, they just, it's like every day, and I know guys get hurt, but Kevin, every day you come in and I'm at the point now where I expect somebody to be injured. It just, it's like between Framber Valdez yesterday and Trevor Story, we knew he was hurt and we kind of suspected it was long-term, but now he's got a fracture of his shoulder.
It makes what Barrios does that much more special, right? Seeing all these guys going down and Barrios taking the ball every 5 days.
It also makes me think that this is going to be a wacky year. Like there could be somebody we didn't expect, because these are division race altering injuries.
Yeah, I think
sometimes they are.
I think sometimes players have to remember it's their careers. Like I know what organizations are asking them to do, but sometimes you got to, you know, go home and think about, man, how can I sort of back off a little bit, still be as good, and either pitch every 5 days or play 140-plus games? Like, sometimes you got to have a little aha moment. Maybe this is
it. And not run 100% to first base all the time.
No. I mean, you can make it look like you're running 100% without actually doing it, right? I mean, you can have a little eye wash to it.
Oh. Do you remember
Mike Trout does it.
Do you remember Jim Edmonds? Great defensive center fielder. Very good friend of mine who spent a lot of time covering the St. Louis Cardinals. Used to call him Mr. False Hustle.
I guess. I mean, there's
going to dive for it.
Yeah, the TV dive. Everybody's heard people talk about the TV dive. You know, I always say this. You got four at bats. You could run a ball out four times at first base. You get paid bunches of money to do it. You know, I mean, you want to be a good teammate?
You made that point. You want to be a good teammate,
it would start
the extra
there,
base.
Right? I mean, make a defender make a play.
You know what we haven't talked about? We haven't touched on Chris Bassett, who gets a start tonight.
It's the sinker. The sinker's been getting hammered. Like, you know, it's the sinker. It's the velocity on the sinker. You know, instead of 89, 91, be 91, 93. If it's there, he can get away with throwing some, you know, middle of the plate, catching a bunch of the plate, and play better defense behind him. The defense behind him has been atrocious. Catch the balls that you're supposed to catch. You know, he's a soft contact guy. He needs everybody catching the balls they're supposed to catch. You do that, make the outs you're supposed to make, he'll go seven tonight.
Good
team
matchup.
Not great.
I was going to say, it's a team that's not hitting.
Yeah, they're very aggressive. He can add and subtract. He can make some guys frustrated. He's got to have the sinker. He's got to have the velocity on the sinker. And he's got to have them playing good defense. He has those three things. He should be fine.
We saw Chad Green last night.
I mean, I would watch his outings with one eye. Like, raise your hand if you're comfortable with him in the game.
Yeah.
Right? It's a slider, is it a curveball?
It's
got curveball speed, but I think he's trying to have it move like a slider. A lot of those are non-competitive. Like, there's... When you bring him in, again, I think when they get the couple of guys back that can pitch the ninth and eighth inning, and now he can pitch more in the sixth and seventh inning, he will be a lot better.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you might, given the way the Mariners, I'm probably going to curse him, But given the way the Mariners are hitting right now, given who you have coming in after them, Colorado, you might be able to get away with this
for now. I think they're telling you how they feel about him right now with the way they're using Jimmy Garcia. Why ain't he pitching where Jimmy Garcia would pitch?
Yeah.
You know, middle of the order, you know, closer game coming in with traffic. They want clean inning. They want ninth inning. You know, they want probably 5, 6, 7 instead of 2, 3, 4. Big as a difference. So, you know, just right now, I think because of the way they're forced to use him, yeah, hold your breath a little. Go to the refrigerator.
Go to the refrigerator.
That's it for us today. We will be back tonight following the game with hopefully another winning edition of Blue Jays Talk, and we'll be on tomorrow.
Have faith.
We'll be on tomorrow from 2 to 3 and post-game as well. Enjoy the baseball. Have a great day.